Why in the hell would you want to write React server components in Go? Welcome back to another episode of Backend Banter. Today, I am joined by Yaroslav, or Jay Larkey, as you might know him on Twitter. And we're going to talk about something really interesting. We're going to talk about React server components. And you might go, whoa, React server components, this is a backend podcast. But we're going to talk about React server components in Go, which is this thing I've never even heard of before. And when Jay Larkey was talking to me on Twitter about this, I was like, we need to talk about this on the podcast. Okay, so go ahead, Yaroslav. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Hi. Very nice to be on your podcast. So I'm a developer. I started coding like way before I started doing it for work, which is like not everyone has this experience. So it's like I feel like I should mention that. And I've been doing a lot of different languages. I was doing a lot of Erlang before Go was released. So when Go was released, I was pretty excited because I saw that Go was basically like Erlang plus Plon 9. So it's like a lot of the kind of like the same ideas. And I can go more into that actually, but let's just keep it kind of like more straight. And I was kind of like a huge fan of Go back when it was released, it so happened to be that I actually started working with Erlang kind of like professionally, and I've been doing a lot of different languages, including like Ruby and some of the, like the crazy ones in between, and I switched to being kind of like a full stack. Elixir or Erlang on the back end and like JavaScript on the front end, probably in 2014 or 15, when kind of like React kind of like became a thing. That's where I started doing more front end, and kind of like in a few years I actually switched and doing like more front end, more React and TypeScript. So I still have all the tinkling from writing back end code. And I do write some like tooling or like scripts to automate some stuff and all that stuff. But I've been doing a lot of plain kind of like front end recently. And that's I think that's most of my like Twitter kind of like posts are all about. Like, hey, what do you think about, I don't know, like all the frameworks that are showing up, like, I don't know, like AstroQuick or whatnot, Solid, right? But I still usually work in kind of like a full stack environment where I have to think about backend. I have to know what databases are fast and all of that stuff.
Yeah. It feels like to me that the web is always undergoing an identity crisis. So this isn't exactly breaking news, but it feels like right now there's like a new identity crisis, which is, I feel like we had 6 or 7 years of single page apps kind of just dominating the web space. Like, we're going to have these heavy clients. We're going to do, you know, single page React or Vue apps, and there'll be a data API and we'll communicate with it. And now with like HTMX becoming a super hot thing that everyone's talking about, and even just React server components and Next and Nuxt, like a lot of server side generation is coming back in vogue. This isn't a new idea, right? This is always like a thing with PHP, but it starts to blur the lines again between backend and front-end development, which is interesting because like back up 15 years, you just had web developers who just like wrote PHP. And then I feel like we had a decade of like hard split between backend and front-end. And now it's starting to feel like maybe we'll see companies starting to kind of blur the lines again. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is actually like a great topic. And I started like learning about web development when everyone was like a webmaster and PHP was kind of like a front-end technology. If doesn't make any sense like in modern days, but
please,
that's kind of like
your
how
webmaster. Yeah,
that's how we looked at it back in the day. And I would let's start with hot takes right away. So one thing that I kind of like disagree with people is about like, oh, we were doing server-side rendering for like 20 years. No, we're not. So the thing is that if you go to like Wikipedia, like and like the like the if you look into terms, server-side rendering narrowly means running SPA application on the server. There is no server-side rendering in PHP. There is no SPA in PHP.
So HTMX is not SSR by your definition, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what PHP was doing is server rendering without like SSR. It's just SR, or as we used to call it, dynamic rendering.
So it's the side. Server-side rendering is different than server rendering, is what you're telling me.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
I don't understand the etymology there, but I'll give it to you for the sake of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think it's like a pretty important. It's kind of like a Mandela effect. It's like, yeah, of course we were doing SSR rendering like 20 years ago. Like that's kind of like everyone as a default like kind of like believes that this what happened. It's like it's dynamic rendering. It's like an answer for static like websites. So. Static site generation, kind of like that was the thing, like the first kind of like the first step that was there in the websites. You used to have documents, then you would generate those documents, and then like as a third step, you would generate dynamic documents. So like for each request, if there is like a username that you can put in the header, that's dynamic rendering. Okay. So it doesn't require JavaScript. There's no APIs involved. Just when you're generating the document, you will dynamically put like the cookie value or like whatever, right? Database. Those were the terms. So when we were talking about like, oh, this is the same thing as PHP, it's like, of course not. It's like, there are like so many steps in between what we were doing in PHP and what we are doing right now in React. So I disagree with that kind of like, and I'm not putting you kind of like on the spot. I think everyone kind of like uses those terms and like just like thinks in those.
Well, I'm fine. Terms. Like, I'm a big fan of using different words to mean different things. the important thing to me is to understand what the distinction is. So server rendering or dynamic rendering is exactly what you just described, which is what HTMX and PHP are doing, right? You've got a backend server.
Yeah.
It gets a request. It loads some data from a database and it kind of injects the data into the page.
Yeah.
What's different about what you're doing with React server components?
Yeah. So it's actually like So let's clarify a bit what SSR means then. Okay. So I said it shortly, but I don't think it's like everyone probably caught it. But like, why SSR is different is that you take your client application that has like buttons that are not that has like button on clicks, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like on the server, there is no button on click. It's like it's just strings. But on the client, you can have like events. You can have like users entering something like in fields, you have like prevent default and like all of that stuff. What SSR like as a layer is doing, it emulates kind of like enough of the browser to generate HTML string that would try to match what you will have in the browser. So that when browser is when you opened your page, you will see exactly the same HTML, and then you will like Angular does it that way. So it's like it will just like render your app again and like destroy everything that had before, and it will like re-render the page and just like hoping it will be the same. React is a bit smarter than that. They will like keep all the nodes. They will just like check if it's matching. So MME and like everyone, React and everyone else except for Angular. So
let me try to like that back to you to make sure I'm understanding.
Sure. Because
I'm going to be perfectly honest. I'm pretty new to this. We recently migrated Bootdev's Vue 3 single page application to Nuxt. Primarily for SEO purposes, right? Because of this whole issue, we can now do the server-side rendering, and then the rendered HTML is shipped down to the client where it's already been rendered, but then it's kind of re-rendered, and frankly, it's still a little fuzzy in my head, right? My background's in back-end development, not front-end development. So what I'm understanding is the difference is that there's, rather than just string manipulation, which is what like the dynamic rendering was with PHP and HTMX, where we're just taking an HTML string and injecting values into it. There's some emulation, like it's less of treating it as just a string of HTML and more like you're treating it as a, I don't know, an abstract syntax tree. Like you're actually emulating the nodes in the document object model and doing some logic. Eventually you're stringifying it, right? As HTML, shipping it down to the front end, but then you also have to have a bunch of sophisticated logic on the front end to take the rendered stuff and now start running your client side code on it.
That sounds perfectly like reasonable way of thinking about it. I just want to say that like I'm just like seeing people like typing it in the comments. It's not exactly how it works in all the frameworks, because this like, hey, we're doing this inefficiently. Is there a way to do it more efficient? And it's like, yes. And like a lot of the fastest frameworks, like Marco, Svelte, and like all of those, they will do it like much more smarter, and they will do some of this stuff during the compile step. So they will actually produce like different server bundle from the client bundle. So like, and the server rendering of that application is going to be like much smoother, kind of like more optimized. But you have to think about it as like as running the same application in two environments, because that's just like a kind of like mental model that is like I'm trying to.
Which means you're like doing some logic twice. You're going to do it on the server, ship it down to the client, and then like do it again.
And you can imagine just like, oh, I want to render a button that has like on click. So in React, your button component produces like people call it VDOM. There's a lot of like semantics what you would exactly like call a VDOM, but like it produces an object, and that object has like type div, children like this text, properties like on click do like this thing, right? And this thing of like converting kind of like component to, let's say, JSX or like VDOM, right? So like to this object, I think it's called I don't remember like right terms how they call it, but like creating this object, you can run this function on both on the client and the server. It's just what you're doing with that object that you just created will be different. For a client, you will be like document.createElementDiff. So it's like you will create a DOM element, you will add all the properties on it that you need, and then you will like insert it into the window. And on the server side, you will like, okay, I'm creating a string that starts with like angle bracket div, then some properties, then like text inside, and like closing with div, right? So like the kind of like rendering of component to this internal representation will be the same. The rendering of internal representation to DOM and to HTML is going to be different. And there's actually like a third step. It's creating a DOM representation that is hydrating the HTML that we just sent is going to be a bit different as well, because you're like, oh, I already have HTML. I don't need to create it. Right. I just need to kind of like to connect it to like, to make sure that your refs it's a React terminology. I don't remember how they call it in Vue, but like your like references to if you want to run like effect of like animating color or something like that, you need to point to exactly like the DOM element.
Yeah.
And that pointing is like what hydration is doing. It will find everything, like it will match every component to its output in the HTML that already exists. You don't want to like recreate it with create DOM. and you will call your like usefx passing that reference to the client code, but you don't have that on the server, right? Because there is like no effects on the server.
Okay, so let me say that back to you again, because again, sure, we're back-end developers here. Like half of what you're saying is probably going over our heads. Like, what's a DOM? Okay, so let me make sure I understand. In a single page application, like take a React single page application, the HTML sent from the server to the client is like a shell. There's like nothing in it, right? There's like very few nodes.
I think that's a bit different discussion, because like what you do when you kind of like boot your React component is that you're saying, hey, there's the component, and here is like where you mount it into the DOM.
Right.
And what you're sending in traditional kind of like complete SPA without server-side rendering is that you're sending an empty div, and you're saying, hey, there is no HTML to hydrate. Just render your app inside of this thing.
Right.
And it's a bit different from like kind of like modern frameworks where they do SSR, and like the whole document should be like re-rendered, should be hydrated.
Right. That's what I mean. I'm trying to contrast it. So like in the SPA world, we have like a shell with nothing, and we just like use JavaScript to inject the entire DOM as we need it. Whereas it sounds like with this SSR framework, call it hydration, right? So like we get more than just a shell. We get like maybe even all of the nodes in the HTML document.
Usually, yeah.
And then the JavaScript has to be smart enough to like go find, like match some IDs or whatever, right? To add functionality or whatever it needs to add. Rather, it's like it's probably doing more upserts, like create or update operations than just create operations. Is that maybe the way to think?
Yeah, that's actually like a great analogy. On the client level, you need to, once you're hydrating, you're like, hey, there are like two strategies. So one strategy is like, hey, I failed to hydrate. Oops, I'm sorry. Like, and it gives up. Usually what it does is like, hey, I try to connect to this component. I was expecting to see like a div there, but I see a button there. So my hydration step failed. I'm presuming like something got cached on CDN wrong, or like who knows like what happened. I can't use that HTML that was sent over the wire to me anymore. So instead, I'm giving up, and I'm like removing everything that there was, and I'm creating like I'm switching to completely like SPA mode as a fallback. So
the fallback is break like everything you sent me, and I'm doing it myself. Just like,
it will just like say like, hey, I think this document is like no good.
It's like step aside, server. I'm throwing away everything you gave me, and I'm doing it myself. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's a good fallback. Okay, yeah, so that's React. Well, that kind of describes like Nuxt, Next, and React server components. So how does a React server component differ from just like what Next.js does or what Nuxt does? Is there even a difference? Is it just another feature?
Yeah, so there is like a pretty important kind of like a mindset. And again, like React team is trying to kind of like, it's trying to write the both ways, and they're trying to say like, hey, this is a pretty small change, don't think about it. And it's like, and by the way, this is like a complete paradigm shift, we're doing everything differently now. So it's like pick one. So they're trying to make it kind of like hidden from you, as if like you're writing your application as if you were doing it before, and it's like sometimes it will just like say to you like, hey, You're actually trying to do this animation on like an actual DOM node. That stuff doesn't exist on the server. Please switch this component to use client. And you're like, okay, if they told me to do that, that's probably what I need to do. And it's like, you shouldn't be kind of like thinking too much about like how you're actually writing it. So that's the thing they want to sell is like, hey, this is like a pretty easy thing to adjust to. Like, yeah, just like mark some of your components as client components, and that's going to be it. You have to know that like when they say client, that means like that SSR thing where it's the same code that's going to run on the server and on the client, but it has to be like a client component that is emulated on the server. the same thing I was talking about before, like about SSR. While server components are just on the server, there is no client emulation of server components.
Once it's rendered on the server, it's done. Like there will be hydration or like matching up on the client. It's just this is the HTML.
Well, there is technically kind of like a step where they have to do almost hydration. Like it's a tricky thing again about like the naming, because React team doesn't like to call this hydration.
Okay.
But like the actual function that you call is like hydrate root. So it's like it's a bit funny.
We don't want to call it hydration, even though we literally called it hydration.
Yeah. Every time that I call that I call this hydration, or I call what like quick dust hydration, like they are so upset. But it's like, don't call your function hydrate then. It's like,
yeah, that's okay. That's pretty funny. So it's
There's like
It's like
there's like a technical. There is a technical difference, and it's like it's not the same as like the hydrations of like the yesteryears. There is like two ways of thinking about it, and like why I created this like thing in Go is that I wanted to look at it from like this angle that I'm going to talk. Yeah. But there's like another angle, and like I let some other people talk about it.
Yes. So let's get to Go. Why in the hell would you want to write React server components in Go?
Well, that's a it's actually like not that. For me, the answer was I left my previous job. I didn't start my new one, and I had a few weeks to kill. And I was like, this sounds like a fun project that I can do.
Yeah.
That's the whole kind of like backstory of it. Well, the idea is that I think by having this tool, it's a bit like demystifying what React Server components are, and everyone was talking about it. So like if you look at the earliest React Server components talk, everyone was like, yeah, and I bet you can use different backend to do that, and no one was doing it. And I was like, hey, what's happening? And actually, when I was starting my Go thing, like 2 weeks later, someone started doing this in OCaml.
Who was it?
So I don't remember now. Like I talked with them on Twitter, and I can try to find it.
Was it TJ or Sabine?
No. But I think Sabine like sent that guy to me or something like that. So it's they were involved somehow. I don't remember. It kind of like happened like a month ago or more. So it's like I don't remember. But this idea of like using different backend for RSCs was kind of like was there from the beginning, but like no one was doing it. And there is like that kind of like disconnect of like, hey, if you want to do that, you need to know that backend language.
Yeah.
But like everyone who knows about React, like they only know about JavaScript. I'm joking, but like that's kind of like the thing, right? Yeah. So like if you're doing backend, you're not interested in like
sometimes they don't even know JavaScript.
Yeah. And if you're doing front end, you're not interested in other backends, because it's like it has to be kind of like less ergonomic, if that makes sense. It's like if you're writing your application in two languages, it's kind of like you can't do all the same things, if that makes sense. It's like in React, I can just like go and like use server, use client. I can switch kind of like pretty quickly between the components. But like, hey, this button used to be like on the server. Now I need to put it in the client. Again, client means browser and SSR. So now I need to move this component. It's like, okay, now I have to rewrite it in a completely different language, which is like, I'm not selling my thing too well right now.
So I built this thing. Everyone says it's a terrible idea. And you know what? Upon further reflection, it's sounding like a really bad idea. Need to work on the pitch.
Yeah. And I was focusing on kind of like the educational angle. It's like, hey, how would you explain what React Server components are to someone who like haven't touched like any of this stuff. And with by using two separate languages, it actually gives you like this level of separation. It's like, oh, I understand what it does when it renders on the server. I understand like why server components are different, why rules for server components are different. Oh, I understand like why this thing is different. So
I'm a huge fan of that.
My goal was kind of like educational. I want to make kind of like a nicer like a talk or a demo out of it. I haven't had time to do that yet, but I think it's actually like pretty like nice model. And I got it actually from like Astro. So what in Astro is happening is that like Astro does very much a lot of the same stuff as React Server Components do, but you're using .astro files instead of like .tsx files.
Right.
So right, you're like, oh, I clearly see that like why I can't import Astro components inside of React components. But it's like, it's not as obvious, like why can't I import server components in React from client components in React? Because like,
right,
they're the same. Like why can't I do that? So that's kind of like how I started thinking about it, is like with Astro. And just like the hydration question, it's really interesting for me, because like everyone is talking about it, but like not everyone just like understand what it is, if that makes sense. And everyone has like a lot of everyone has a lot of assumptions. And here's where I think is like, what is the way that I would introduce someone who only worked on a backend before. Here's how I would kind of like ease you in into like what is like technically happening. And okay, so let's start with that. So we are going to say that we want to render a button. We're going to ignore like head, body, streaming, just ignore everything. Just imagine that you can send kind of like a partial, if that makes sense. Like, just like send a button. So like how would you send an HTML of the button? You would open your PHP, write a scale injection. I'm joking, but like you would make a string that starts with a like opening button tag. It will have some text, and you're writing a string of the like closing button tag, and you're like, okay, I can just like send a string from the server, and I will see a button on the browser.
Yes.
Like everyone agrees with that. That makes total sense. You can add the script tag to that button, and you can add hx get equals something, and you have an HTMX app. Like everyone can understand like this far, right? Then you're like, okay, I don't want to actually like send a string of a button. What if I have like an arbitrary text and I need to escape it? Or if that's not actually like a text, but like a markdown document that is already like parsed into HTML. So like I have to escape some of it, but like not all of it. It's like, okay, that's kind of like too much. I need to have some kind of like templating language, or I need to have some kind of like JSX looking language where I'm creating like an object that is like a button, and that object could have a text on it and it could have children, right? So it's like, it's more structured. You know, Kamal, I think it's called Dream or something like that. Okay, I think Dream is... Okay. I'm really bad at, like, all the backend stuff right now. So,
but, like, you need to serialize the data that represents the button. If I'm understanding right, you're talking about, like, kind of serializing it in, like, more of a data-oriented format rather than, like, a string.
I'm actually talking about... Internal representation, if that makes sense. Like when you're working on the server, so like you have to know that React is started as like PHP library. It's called XHP, and that was like a kind of like a templating language where you can just like write HTML inside of PHP.
Okay.
And it worked as JSX, so you could have like, hey, and this is the attribute, this is like the text value and that stuff. And that thing would compile in this like internal representation where it would say like, hey, I have like a object of type button, and that button has a children that is like text. And sometimes that text is like also a component, and it can like, it can turn it into a HTML string, like safe HTML string.
So like in Go, I would use maybe certain typed structs, and I would add fields to the structs to describe an HTML document. And then later I'd run the Go code and it would be able to spit out an HTML document. But me as a developer, like I'm writing it in like, in Python, it would be an object. Kind of like structured. In Go, it would be structs, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you can have like a kind of like nicer syntax for it. So I looked into some of like, I think it's called like GoPonents or something like that. You write kind of like a HTML, kind of like JSX looking thing. It will compile it into the, like kind of like that intermediate representation. And then it will use templating like so that it's like escaped properly and all of that stuff. Because if you use like string templates that is like default run in Go, you have to have like a separate step of like turning that string into kind of like a structured object if you want to do the stuff that I'm going to talk about. Usually you're like, oh, I already need the string, so like let me just like concatenate the strings. And if I need to insert like a safe or unsafe like HTML, I would just do like template.raw or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But that's how it is structs inside of it. When you're putting your like holes in the template, it is a struct and it's marked if it's like safe or unsafe.
Yeah.
So you have to know like how do you need to escape it, but it's most of it is a strings because it's like it's much kind of like cheaper just to copy a string to like to the socket, right, instead of like doing all of those like internal representations. But there are tools like that for Go as well, and I think it's called GoPonents. It's like components for Go, and you write it and you write like, hey, I have a button and it has this text, and this thing is like internally kind of like an struct, but a struct can be turned into a string.
Right.
So that's like the first kind of like a developer experience or whatnot is like step that is kind of like separate from templates. The templates are the default, if that makes sense, but like you can also do this.
Right.
And this is like another layer of encapsulation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. In Go, you have like a template and you can call that template and you can pass some like parameters to it. With this thing, I can write a function that takes kind of like props and it returns this kind of like internal representation, right? So it's like it's a button, but whatever the children prop that I got, I'm just like passing it as is. Right. So that's like what XHP was. So it was like XML and PHP. So it was like a precursor of kind of like JSX. And that's what we were doing in PHP. So now when you have this internal representation, you can turn it into like anything that you want. And you can say, oh, once I have this like button, I can turn it into HTML. And this is going to be dynamic rendering. There's like no client application, if that makes sense, right? So like I'm creating like a Go struct.
That's like old that has PHP, a type of a button. Just SR, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I have a struct, type of a button, children is like hello, right? And I can turn that, and I can call a function, render to HTML, and I can pass this thing, and it will render me the HTML. So it's like, everyone's agreeing with that, like we were doing that for 20 years, like everything was fine.
Yeah.
So now, the crazy idea is that I can also try to convert that internal representation to the representation that React understands. I can create... so in React, when I render a button, like the JSX or like VDOM, like however you want to call it, this like internal representation that they have, it's like $$ type symbol React component. Type button. Children like this and
it's
that.
JavaScript so it's JavaScript like, objects, right?
Yeah, yeah, they have this like JSON representation of the object, and everyone who was doing React before, you know that you can call like react.createElement, and you can just like call this function, and it will return you that JSON. Mm-hmm. The thing about this JSON is that for React, there is no difference like at all at any level between this object and like rendering like a real component, like a real kind of like client-side component.
So you're saying that like, you can, if on the Go server, you can take your internal struct representation of a component,
Go
serialize struct, it to like JSON. You can then JSON, send it over the wire to a client-side React app,
and I can call React, and I can all call React dot like render or whatever like create root dot render now like React 18, and I can pass that JSON, and it will render exactly the same button.
Right. Okay.
And if I'm sure that I'm rendering exactly the same button, I don't have to call create like a render function. I can call hydrate function, And it will actually preserve the HTML that was there in the page, and it will only do the like the client side stuff. So if you have like on click console log or something like that, like it will only connect that thing, but it will preserve the like the DOM element as it is on the page.
Got it.
So like once you're here, you're like, okay, so I can send, I can create a button on the server. And I can hydrate that button on the server, on the client.
On the client, yeah.
So I can create kind of like as fancy or like as deep document as I want from Go. And I can go to my React DevTools and I can see, oh, this is like, this is a button. This is like this thing. This is that thing. And all that stuff. And it's like, okay, this is cool. This sounds like we're already getting somewhere. Like what is the next step? And there are like two steps, but two directions, kind of like, but let's go to this direction. What if I have an endpoint on the server that just returns that JSON? Mm-hmm. And I can send you like a URL and say like slash about. And it returns me like the whole page for about as JSON representation.
Right.
What I can do in my client application, I can add like event listener for all the clicks. And I can say when click happens, go to that new URL, like fetch that new URL, fetch JSX, and call render function on the React again. And just render that new HTML. It will be for React, it will be exactly the same as if you're writing a spa.
This is CSR, there right? This is client-side. This is client-side rendering, or I should say client-side rendering. Yeah.
All of them. So it will take the previous DOM or VDOM. It will take the new VDOM. It will check everything that changed, and it will only update the parts that changed. So if you have like a search button, you're typing something, and you click on the link, and only this part of the page should change, you will get the like HX boost, like in HTML terms. HTML sorry terms,
yeah.
You will get this behavior. You will get like all the morph DOM or like all the preserving of the states and all that stuff, kind of like for free. Even though like the whole application is rendered on the go, but all the diffing, all the kind of like comparisons of like what should be changed and what should be preserved is going to be done by React.
Yeah,
which is again like React is like 100 kilobytes, HTML is like 10 kilobytes. So it's like you're like. This is like not the greatest idea if you just do this.
We can rebuild HTMX, but make it 10 times as bloated.
Yeah. So this is like not the easiest sell to make, but you can see like the start of the idea is that you can generate your content on the server, but you can use client-side navigation almost for free. Like the function that I described, it's going to be like 50 lines of code to like to handle basically like everything. So it's like, it's going to be like, yeah, if something, if we had a click, go fetch this new representation of the whole page and just call a render. There's like no, there's no special kind of like comparing IDs or something like that like they usually do. It's just, just like render the whole page. React will take care of everything, if that makes sense.
So I've got a question. First of all, the part of the sale or the part of the pitch that's basically says you don't have to write as much JavaScript, I'm sold. I hate writing JavaScript. Just you get to write Go on the back end, I'm already in, right? That's how HTMX was sold to me. That's how this could be sold to me. I have one big concern, though. Here's my concern. Imagine the React authors 10 years ago when everyone was using React more as like even just a library to do reactive rendering stuff. That internal representation, that like $$, whatever representation of a React component, I can only imagine was intended to not be exposed by the API. Like if you could imagine JavaScript as like a more safe object-oriented programming language, that would have been a private variable that you as a user of React wouldn't be allowed to touch. Like you're just allowed to call the React functions is what I imagine. And now what you're doing essentially is becoming fully dependent on this internal representation of a React component Is that part of the React team's like API contract? Are they dedicated to not changing that representation? Because that would be like terrible if like you built an application around this and then they just like completely changed that out from under you.
Well, it's a great point. I think there are like a few ways of answering that. So first is that it's not completely internal representation, if that makes sense. And the trick that I do in Strike is that I do this conversion actually like in client side, like in JavaScript, and I call react.createElement, right? So like that's the public API.
Yeah.
Whatever they're going to change, like that API is public.
Right.
So I'm not going to get any mismatches. So I'm kind of like I'm insured a bit of this, but it's pretty kind of like well established standards. There are like libraries that will do react.createElement inside of them. There okay. are libraries actually that would create that internal representation, and which is like not entirely like advertised as like as a good thing, but some of them like de facto do this. So it's a, like a valid concern. And I would say that we are like mostly covered on this.
Yeah.
There are a lot of like ways how to design this in more kind of like robust way where it's I'm not doing like everything completely like to handle that, but mostly.
Yeah.
if that makes sense.
I guess it makes it like, does Next have to do it the same way? Do they create this internal representation and send it over the wire?
Well, the thing about Next is that they everything that Next does in terms of like React Server components is based on this library that is like the source code for it is not published. So it's like, cool. It's like, it's not even a spec. It's not even like a standard. It's just the thing that they're playing with right now. And that's the kind of like, that's the angle with my thing is that I said like, hey, I can actually just like create my own protocol and like that is optimized on like being understandable. Instead of like all their decisions that they made for like being more like better gzipped or whatnot, right? So like they have like more kind of like constraints on how it should be implemented, and I was like, hey, I just like I will just like do this layer as I wanted, so that like the it's kind of it's even like pretty printed. So like when you see all the like debug tools, you see like what is happening, and you're like, oh, it's kind of like more understandable compared to Next, but. Yeah, it's one of those kind of like unsolved kind of like things. I think there will be just like a spec for like what is the like the expected way that it should be serialized. But I don't think it should be, if that makes sense, because I think it's fine to just like reinvent this thing your own. And I know that a lot of people are like upset that this thing is like not open sourced and not standardized and all that stuff. Mm. And I'm like, that's fine. Like you can just like create your own. Like why is everyone so hang on this like on this package?
Yeah, that's interesting. I had no idea that it was like. It sounds like you're kind of trying to optimize for the transparency and like inspectability, debuggability. I had no idea that like Next was doing something fairly. I guess I would describe it as being like optimized for performance. Is what it sounds like.
I'm not entirely sure what they were like optimizing for. I looked a lot into their code, like trying to understand it. And it's like, okay, so this file, 1,000 lines, I'm just taking like 10 of those, and that's my whole implementation.
Okay.
Right. And that's the kind of like the whole React system is like that. It's like if you look at React, it's like it's huge. It does great amounts of stuff, and it's like. I'm sure it needed software at Facebook to do that. Like, if you want to just like represent how this works, you can do like much more simpler.
It's probably
stuff.
Edge so, case so upon edge case upon edge case that needs to be handled, right?
Yeah. And again, like what are you getting from like if every React Server components implementation that is written in JavaScript is using the same package, they don't have to support that. And if React changes something, it just like just works.
Yeah.
Right. But if everyone invents their own, that's kind of like why is it one better than the other one? Right. So like if you're already in JavaScript, like all of the React Server components implementation that I've seen, except for ones that I wrote before, like they all use this package. And it's like, I understand why you're using it. It's like, I'm not against it, But I had to write my own anyway because I don't have JavaScript on the server. And that's actually, we don't have like too much time, but I want to finish that, like the thing about like the first step is you go and you say, hey, I can route now. I can get client-side routing. I can get kind of like HX boost, kind of like functionality using React is instead of like Morph DOM. The second part is that you can, I gave that example of like, hey, what if I'm typing something in the search bar and I click on something? Like, how do I preserve that state? So if that state is just kind of like internal state of the DOM, if that makes sense, that's what it is for default, like for input, it will be done automatically. But what if it's a kind of like a client state? So it's like, what if it's just like a JavaScript counter that you like click on a button and it stays like 5, right?
Yeah.
And you want to go to another page and you want to see it stay 5 instead of like getting data from the server.
Right.
So what is happening is that you need to go to like to the second step. And the second step is like, hey, I have this span or like div or whatnot. And I want to have inside of it not a text 0, but I want to have a client component that's called counter. And that's where all the hell breaks loose. So like before that, it was really simple. Everything was like fine and dandy. Like once you're saying that, you're like, hey, React. And there's like actually like, it's not spec'd yet, but there's like a whole protocol how you can like say over the wire, hey, here's where you have like a client boundary and all that stuff. Like, I didn't do any of this stuff. Like, I implemented all of this myself. But you can say like, hey, and here I have like a client hole, if that makes sense. And even if you go back to that thing where you were saying about like, hey, I have this SPA with a shell, and I'm rendering a React inside of like div called like ID root. You can imagine all of this shell being kind of like that thing that you created like internal representation for with Ghost structs. And where you have this like ID root, you're saying, and here is a Ghost struct that is like specially marked that you don't render it on the server. You say like, here is the client hole. And what I do in my thing, I call it island. It's kind of like a joke, but like if anyone is going to go through the source code, like you're looking for island component. In the island component, I say, hey, here's that struct, and it has type of island, and here's the like the URL for JavaScript code for this thing.
Okay.
So when you're trying to render it on the server, in Go. Like the easiest way for you to just say, hey, that's a client component that requires JavaScript. I'm not going to render it. I'm going to render an empty string. And that's like, unless you want to pull in like V8 or something like that, or like emulate JavaScript, it's like, that's what I basically just did. I have like this fallback, so you can just like render some HTML instead of like, so you can load like a loader, spinner, or you can like try to guess if it's like a counter, it should be 0, right? You can just like print 0. So it's like,
I want to make sure I'm understanding. So we've got this problem of like, you want the state to persist.
We got this problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like before that, we got this problem where we have to serve, when we are trying to server render the page, there are some holes that we want to server side render.
Some holes that we want to server side render. Okay.
Because that's like the whole application is HTML, 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 but here's React.
Yeah.
It's like for this client, for this counter, in order to render it, it needs to be a client component. And client components needs to be rendered on client, like in browser, and right. It needs to be emulated on server as well to get like initial values. And that's the SSR part. That's where you, for those islands, you need to, like everything else was dynamically rendered.
Yep.
But here is the hole where you need to do SSR, and I'm just keeping SSR for like the simplicity of this whole system.
Got it.
I would have to run like bun or dean or like node to server side render it, all that stuff. Like I don't want to do that.
So is it correct to say, I want to understand like where you're drawing the line. You're kind of drawing the line at if I need to emulate client side state on the server.
If I need to run JavaScript, that's the line.
Okay, got it. So you can emulate a lot of state on the server, anything the server like knows about from the database, stuff like that, that you would like normally do dynamic rendering for. But if you need to like react to button clicks on the client, you're not updating that.
And you need like a client library that is like, I don't know, like printing on canvas or something like that. Right.
Okay,
so like that issue is like comes up all the time where you're like, I can't render this on the server. It's like, that's like, we're just giving up and just like, we're showing you loading spinner. And then on the client, we do the canvas like drawing, like WebGL or whatnot. It's like,
I do this all the time. So this is, there's a client only tag and you just wrap stuff. You're like, this isn't happening on the server. Like we have a text editor like in a browser. It's like, let's just let the browser deal with that. Just wrap it in a client only tag.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is like, there are some things that you only want to do kind of like once you have a browser, there are some things that you can do SSR. So like in browser and in server, and there are some things that you want to do just on the server. So it's like, that's where like all of those systems kind of like connect. And like the border that I'm drawing is like, does it require .js file? If it does, I'm saying this is a client hole. You can't dynamically render the client hole from Go. You need JavaScript for that. So you could just like run V8 or something like that, but like I wasn't kind of like too interested in that. And actually that other like OCaml implementation, I think it does that. I think it does SSR. I think they boot in, there are like multiple ways of doing it, SemVasm stuff or like whatnot. But it's like, I wasn't focused on that. So it's like, you just say like, hey, here's the hole. And in that hole goes that JavaScript file. So on the client, when I'm trying to hydrate all of this stuff, you can actually say to React is like, hey, React, like this is kind of like a synchronous thing that I'm not ready yet. Please, here's the, like the promise. Once this promise is resolved, I will go back and try to like rehydrate that again. Yeah. So there are like APIs like that. So, and you're saying like, hey, I'm going to like get that JavaScript file. I'm going to run it. I'm going to see what the output is, and then I will pull it. I will render it. But you still have this marker for like client holes, and when you navigate around with that thing that we talked about, like the step one, you just know like, hey, here is the client, and it's like whatever's happening inside the client, just like don't kind of like touch it and like preserve it as is.
Yeah.
But this part is probably like kind of like a. Probably going to go over the head of like backend developers, but with React you have props, and you can basically for a client component you can send server props. So if you need to have some information kind of like passed from the server to the client, you can actually send that as props. So that whole it actually has props. So you can say like, hey, like new text or something like that. So like. This new page that I'm going to use the same component, use the same kind of like JavaScript file. So it's like, and it will preserve the like instance of this thing mm-hmm. as long as like the templates match and all that stuff, right? So it's like, it will preserve it, but like, hey, here's like some new information.
Right.
And that new information can actually be like a promise, or it could be like a stream or like whatnot. And there are like crazy patterns that you can do. Because I have this in my layer of serialization, I can actually serialize promises. So I can have like a synchronous data coming in from the server to the client and I can serialize, kind of like, callbacks or kind of like API endpoints, if that makes sense. It's like, oh, if someone clicks on this thing, don't do kind of like too much stuff on the client, just go back to the server and like, and I will return you the data and all that stuff. So for autocomplete or something like that. So it's like in Go, I would just write a function. It's like, hey, here's my server action that does autocomplete, and it returns like a JSON. Or it can actually return like the elements as well. So it's like I can use the same serialization for like, here's like the new list of like autocomplete options.
Right.
And I can serialize that over the wire. It's like, and you have like a function that you can call on the client, and it returns you like a new component that you can just like render. So there's like a huge thing that like opens up about like the kind of like the communication between client and the server as a kind of like consequences of all of this stuff and like of the like this kind of like client server border.
No, it sounds really interesting. Just the idea of kind of hijacking the wire protocol of React server components and doing all the logic in Go. Like, that resonates with me. This has been an awesome conversation. Where can people find this project that you've been working on, and where can they go watch you work on it and talk about it and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I think right now, like, I'm showing up in Google. So if you Google Golang React Server Components, I think it shows up. If not, go to my GitHub /jlarky/strike, and that's my Go version. I started working on OCaml, but like, it didn't have time to make it work. In README, I have a playlist of YouTube videos where I was working on that. That playlist is a bit harder to digest because it's just like me working through that. It's like, it's not demos, it's just kind of like work sessions. But if you're interested in that, you can find a lot kind of like there. And just go through the source code. Like, I want to see someone who actually like understands Go to go through this, because there are like a lot of not solved things of like, I don't know how to render like HTML in Go without like XSS injections. I'm just hoping that I do, but like,
yeah. Okay. Fantastic. I'll drop all the links to that, down in the show notes, down in the description, so people can go check it out. It's called Strike, right?
Which is a deprecated HTML element. We used to have like a HTML tag strike, and it used to strike through the text,
yeah.
But it's deprecated for like 15 years and it still works.
That's a good name. I like that.